Thank you, John and Paul and music team, and welcome everyone. Good morning. This time of year is known in the church lectionary with a very profound name as ordinary time. So it's one of those stages when actually we don't have any special Sundays or seasons or others to celebrate. And as a result, I've chosen to deviate from the lectionary readings, which tend to jump all over the place a little bit at this time of year, and to commence a new sermon series up until Advent, which is at the end of November. And the heading for the sermon series is Shining as Lights in a Troubled World. Shining as Lights in a Troubled World. And that comes from a passage in Philippians, which I didn't insert. So let me read the passage to you. The passage reads like this: Do everything without complaining and arguing, so that no one can criticize you. Live clean, innocent lives as children of God. Hold firmly to the word of life, then. On the day of Christ's return, I'll be proud that you did not run the race in vain. Actually, it is there, I'm sure. Let me just find that one. There it is. Let me just read it again. It's such a timely passage. Do everything without complaining and arguing, so that no one can criticize you. Live clean, innocent lives as children of God, shining like bright lights in a world full of crooked and perverse people. Hold firmly to the word of life, then. And then on the day of Christ's return, I'll be proud that I did not run the race in vain and that my work was not useless. And that phrase, shining like bright lights, like bright lights in a world full of crooked and perverse people, sort of speaks to our own day and age, doesn't it? As we feel as though we are at the mercy, at the hands of major personalities and powers with an extraordinary capacity to make decisions that impact others. So as part of that, under that theme, shining as lights in a troubled world, this is what we have. It's a thematic series. So just behind the scenes a little bit, I try to ensure that each year we have a series we focus on parts of the Gospels, parts of the New Testament epistles, parts of the Old Testament, and a thematic series where we work around timely topics that speak into our own present time. So this is that space of working with themes, drawing on Scripture, but really focusing what does it look like in our own day and age. So less expository sermons, more speaking to these are the challenges that we have. So I we'll provide this in our welcome sheet and also have it up on the notice board, because they are the types of sermons that you could invite others to, whether it's family, friends, grandchildren, other neighbours. They're the sort of themes that I think will speak into what's on people's minds, what is troubling, what even causing some anxiety in some parts. So running ahead, today I'll be looking at the notion of worth, personal worth. How much are we worth? Who says? And next week we're going to look at friendship and commitment. Lots of people have increased recognition that friendship, and including friends who hang in there, regardless of our messiness or other things, makes an enormous difference. And then the third of my little trifecta is looking at the culture of Tov. Now, Tov is a Hebrew word, and it's the word that means good. You might remember in Genesis chapter 1, at the end of each day, God said, what he's done is good. And he gets to the end of it and he says, and it's actually very good. But that word is a notion of what God intends for creation. It's beautiful, it's good for purpose, and it is the things that create flourishing and health and life. So we're going to focus on what does it have a culture of that goodness, and we'll see how that's actually reflected throughout Scripture. Then Fiona's going to follow that by looking at the Shabbat, principle. Again, another Hebrew word. We might be more familiar with Sabbath, but the Shabbat is actually a little bit, it's a little bit deeper than the Sabbath. Friday night to Saturday is the customary way, but doesn't necessarily have to be that time. So Fiona's going to speak about building in that time of rest and of enjoying the fruits of our labours, the fruits of recreation. That'll be Fiona. Then Paul is going to be looking at grace, and not just grace, but grace upon grace. Looking at the God of grace and how it calls us to demonstrate our understanding. We do things not because of what we want to get as a reward, not because it's some sort of exchange, but because we just want to be people of grace. Charles is then will be exploring the issues of belief in doubt in the midst of all those things that challenge and unsettle and otherwise. Then Dave is going to speak on neurodiversity and personhood, on the notion of what does it mean to be fully formed as a person of God, as a child, as a image and likeness of God, but recognizing our brains aren't always the same. There's a difference amongst the way in which our brains tick and operate. Then on the it's actually the final Sunday of the church year, Christ the King, we're looking at value in life, and it's going to focus on the best value in life is trusting God. That is where the true value is. And Jesus, as our Lord and King, you can find no greater value than following him. And then on Advent Sunday, Dave is then going to introduce us to the theme of church as an extended family. What does that look like? What does that mean? Not just in terms of the language we use, but what does that look like as well? So that's what's mapped out for us for the next few months. You might notice I haven't put a topic down for the 2nd of November on that list. No one noticed, did you? Usually someone always picks it up. Anyway, the reason being, on the 2nd of November will be our Family Fun Day, where we have a family service in church followed by the Family Fun Day in the outer grounds, and it will be a family service. A communion service, just a heads up for that, will be at 8:30 on that Sunday. So there'll be an 8:30 communion, just a shortened service for half an hour, followed by the family service at 9:30. So we've been planning away in that space. Always keen to have some feedback. Okay, so I want to focus for today on the whole notion of worth. Actually, it's the word that is at the root of our English word worship. Worship is a contraction of worth-ship, that which we attribute the greatest worth. But rather than focusing on worship at this stage, or worth-ship, I want to focus on our personal sense of worth. How do we value ourselves? How might we estimate as our value in different ways? And I had a little fun chat with ChatGPT last night. I said, what's the world saying? What's Western society saying about what we attribute worth and value of things? Actually, it was quite a good chat, as it does. You don't never use that as an authority, but it's actually not a bad little exchange because it has a good capacity to gather together thoughts. So we can look at worth, and probably the predominant way in which our Western society, and I'm going to focus largely on our Western society, our Western culture, as a measure of worth, defaults to an economic measure. Whether it's in the political space, decisions are made on the basis of it's all about the economy. We need to do this for the economy. But in a personal sense, and at a profound and a dangerous sense, people's sense of worth can be attributed to what do you contribute to society? What value added do you bring to society? And if you don't have that, you are bringing something of value, you can generate an income, then your sense of worth is diminished. the dangerous flip side of it is we get to a stage of life where we may not be in a position to generate economic income or feed it back into the wider economy. We think as though, well, we're just taking up space. And even worse, the seriously scary end of it is within families, and some older folk can think, probably be easiest if I'm not here because I'm just costing a lot of money to care for me and I'm not really giving back, I'm not really contributing an income. So I'm not feeling as though I'm worth anything. And that is a dangerous space to be. We need to be very aware of pushing back against that narrative that our worth is dependent on how much income, what size of our salary, what we can bring to not just our own household, but push back into the wider economy. So one of the default things is that people's measure of personal worth is shaped around the size of their salary, their assets, their financial security, which often then equates to some social worth. Now, it's much more complicated than that. I'm not suggesting that those things are wrong, but it is dangerous to have a sense of our personal worth is equated to the size of our salary or our income or our financial arrangements. A second measure that our Western society tends to use is productivity and occupation, what we do. So when we introduce ourselves to people, often one of the challenges for those who are retired is that I would have, for 30 or 40 years, I've used this descriptor of myself, my sense of identity. I'm this, I do that. Until suddenly you realise, well, I no longer do that. So who am I in that space if I haven't got an occupation? People are valued by their job title, career status, or perceived contribution to the economy. That actually, again, is stating an alarming truth of our Western value system. Now, I speak as someone who jokingly refers to one or two titles. People occasionally ask me, what do you call me? I'm Tim. It's a great Monty Python line. Just call me Tim. If you insist, you can call me Bishop Tim or whatever else, but I really prefer Tim. With some of my students, I play around. Actually, for you, I'm the Right Reverend Dr. Tim Harris. However, my preferred title, if I'm pushed to it, is I'm the formerly venerable Tim Harris. Because an archdeacon is called a venerable. So I was an archdeacon once or twice in my earlier life. So I'm now the formerly venerable. That one works for me. Do not carry it away with job titles or careers or honorifics or any of that sort of stuff. In the end of the day, it's talking about the position, not the person. We know that. But don't get caught up into titles and descriptors or that sense that we are where we are in our career. And a third avenue, and actually this is one that the ChatGPT came up with in my little conversation with it last night. The other two I come up with myself. Consumer power, the ability to spend, own property and to participate in markets. It's a category that we highly regard. People can go into stores and have a sense that I can buy, I can purchase, because a lot of those stores want to give us a lot of honour. After all, the consumer's always right, especially if they've got a big credit card or they can wave around. And suddenly that gives us a sense of status if we are able to go into and, you know, go into a car and go buy the Lamborghinis or whatever else. That ability to spend, own property and participate does shape a lot of our Western culture, increasingly it seems to me. Now, another category of how our Western society and the culture reflected in our Western society as measures of worth is our social and cultural measures. Our education and knowledge, degrees, credentials, intellectual capital, all carry prestige in some ways. Which school did you go to? Which university did you go to if you go to university? All those different types of descriptors that people say, oh, someone's got a Harvard law degree. That obviously means that they are seriously good at what they do. Now, not disparaging the various different educational entities, but there's a danger of accruing endless streams of qualifications. It may be just me, I suspect it is, or perhaps it's even my baby boomer generation, but I look at some of the how out there some of CVs are these days, and I know the younger generation, the Gen Z and those who come after the Gen Z, I prefer the noughties, are encouraged to be out there, name what you bring, your qualities. Now, it's good to have healthy confidence. I'm not saying that. But don't reduce ourselves to a CV of a whole list of qualifications and pieces of paper. Now, behind the pieces of paper is hard work, it is industry, it is accomplishment. But don't make that a sense of value. That's something that cuts deep within our own family. People's worth isn't dependent on their cognitive ability, on their ability to produce the educational certificates. That should never be a measure of personal worth. And I'll come back to that at the end of the sermon. Another area is the social status, the networks, the influence, the family or class background that we may have. Whether it's the sense of aristocracy that still in some parts of our Western culture is revered, whether it's the people we mix with, the invitations we receive, which particular space you might favour at a sporting event, you know, which inner room you might may be invited into, which clubs we may be members of. Again, that's all becomes a measure of a perception of worth. And then there's our sense of appearance and lifestyle. And this is one of the ones in which the real dangers of social media is a concern, because of the heightened capacity in social media to feedback messaging to young people about their body shape, about their how they present, about how they dress, and all those types of things, is rightly recognised as a serious area of concern. Youth, our attractiveness, our health, and our style are seen as markers of value. And then finally, under this category, there's fame and recognition. Forget in the media, for whatever reason, some media visibility, some social media following, the number of friends or clicks that you can generate on your Facebook page, you know, because your sense of whether you are recognised as someone who's worth following or having notice or not. And the cultural impact can all amplify a perceived sense of worth. Again, that is increasingly a significant driver and pressure of people to be able to present themselves out in that way, to be well regarded. So, this is another one of the same category. I'm just running ahead of myself. I'd use a different format for some reason. Identity and belonging. Again, we know how huge this is. Now, I am unashamedly, proudly have dual citizenship. Yes, the All Blacks won last night. It was a good match. Wallabies did their best, almost got there, but yes, 50-plus tests at Eden Park. Anyway, that's another conversation. You can come back to me and say, Tim, okay, it's a joke, we get that, you don't take it too seriously. Well, sort of I do, but it's okay. But in the end of the day, which nation I identify with, I come back to, is not a key part of my identity. It was huge in the time of Jesus and of Paul. It wasn't so much which nation, but which city you could claim. I'm a city of Tarshish. I'm a city of Jerusalem. I'm a citizen of Philippi. I'm a citizen of Rome. And Paul says, yeah. You know what? I'm a citizen of heaven. Those sense of national identity and ownership of you are, you're not, you're included, you are to be excluded, is a dangerous distortion of Christian thinking. It's one of those areas where European culture, especially European colonial culture, has left a long shadow of Christian nationhood that confuses the two. This culture, this national identity is fused as being God's chosen people. And that is always dangerous space to get into. Nationality, race, gender, and class are more than just words. It's how we view others. It's how we may view ourselves. Social hierarchies often assign a higher place in that status system. And then there is the quality of individualism and self-expression. This is a particular Western cultural value. It's actually unknown in other parts, in other cultures in some ways. But we pride ourselves of being a self-made person, of not needing anyone. In fact, even getting embarrassed if we have to depend on someone else. So long as I can retain my sense of being independent, of being able to be master of my own world, autonomy, authenticity, even self-realization, that is, I have to be true to myself. And that trumps everything else, even if it's pushes others to one side. And increasingly, the narrative can become, it's all about my self-realization. Well, actually, that becomes a very small bus shelter of life to live in. If we try and just retain that sense of it's all about me, and if everyone's running around saying it's all about me, it ends up being a pretty lonely world. It actually doesn't give a strong sense of value. So these are all values that our Western society messaged to us around. It's in our advertising, it's in the way in which we speak of people in the media, how we introduce ourselves and others. And then the area of performance and achievement. Our accomplishments, awards, publications, athletic victories, artistic output can all symbolize success. Now, I am not saying that these are wrong as accomplishments. We should celebrate accomplishments. There's some wonderful YouTube clips, if you ever want to lose half an hour, of looking at a millennial parent trying to explain to a baby boomer parent about the new value system, what you can and can't say. So when a child comes home from school, you can't say, what did you do at school today? No, you're talking about what they did. That's all about work and things. That's wrong. And you go to the award system, and anyone and everyone has to get a certificate, which is great. It's reaffirming in that space. But we do get into that area of awards. Affirmation, encouragement, recognition are healthy, but not as a driver of our sense of worth. If I haven't got that, we are no less a person if we didn't get number one, number two, or number three in that space. I've got a great story coming up. I'm going to give you a clip to show that in a minute. And another one that is really quite insidious is, how do I measure my worth over against someone else? You know, I hear another preacher and I think, oh, they're better than me at preaching. Doesn't really matter. We all are individuals. We all have our own gifts. We all bring things to it. But it's really hard to switch that part of our comparative mindset in as we try and work through how are we comparing with others. Worth is often defined in relative terms. Oh, I'm better than them, or I'm more successful than that, to make me feel better. The danger of that way of thinking is that we put others down or see everyone else as competition. Doesn't work well for teamwork. It doesn't really celebrate that diversity of being who we are. So, let me just look ahead to see where I'm getting to. Okay. bit of a summary scatterbat. I got to this stage in my preparation last night, and I thought, there's a few things I haven't mentioned, I haven't categorised. I'm just going to toss them in there anyway. So in our Western society, we have a big culture about celebrating winners and even derogatory language of losers. This person's a winner, that person is a loser. Not just in competition, but even in life. Are people going through hard times? The danger, and it's horrific rhetoric that can be used to say, oh, they're losers. Whereas these people are winners because they've succeeded, they've managed to go up the career path, they've managed to achieve all these different types of things. Celebrating of success doesn't honour those who've had a go. May not have been a success, but they've learned a lot through having a go. There's a strong church version of this that clergy are really prone to. When clergy get together, the question is, what's your church? What are your numbers? Have you been growing? Has your ministry been a success? And everyone cringes and tries to do the best spin of what they do in that sort of space. I used to play against it, as you know, I'm always a bit contrary in that space. Back in the early days, in the early 2000s, I was saying, oh, our church is declining in numbers because we keep on sending people out. You know, they go out to do mission work or they go out and do other things. So our church numbers are dropping because that's actually what we're told to do. But that is, again, a strong part of the culture. I mentioned about the notions of independence and self-sufficiency, so that if we get to a stage of life where we are dependent on others, the danger is to think as though it's not worth living or it's less worth living. Whereas if I think about it and flip, you know, when we were born, we were pretty dependent on our parents. We needed to be cared for. And if we get to a later stage of our life as parents, that we get cared for by our children, it's actually the inverse of the same dynamic. There's something beautiful about that, of actually being cared for and nurtured. It's the same as there's something beautiful about parenting a young infant. But again, we have this culture to say, if I'm dependent on others, then maybe it's just not, you know, it really damages our sense of worth. We talked about this a little bit before, about being well spoken of our reputation. Now, there's one end of it that's easier to name and to have a bit of a laugh about. It's those who measure their sense of worth by the number of followers they have on Instagram or TikTok or everything else. Now, I do not have an Instagram or TikTok account or anything resembling that. I do have Facebook. I never count how many people own or disown me as a friend in that sort of space. But that is a big part of young culture, to measure how many followers you have, how much influence you have, which gives you a capacity to gain some, to monetize those friendships, those followers in different ways. I can't believe just how rampant that is and how extraordinary the sort of notoriety that people seek to stand out in that space. That part of it probably is easy enough to say, yeah, that's not so much our issue. However, the desire to be well spoken of, well, who doesn't want to be well spoken of? Yeah? We want to have others actually speak positively of us. That's natural. Unless we are using that to derive a sense of worth. And that's where it becomes dangerous. That we then present in a way in which gets the positive comments, the positive feedback, and if we don't receive it, we don't then feel crushed because someone didn't actually say well done afterwards or whatever else. Now it is good and healthy to give feedback and to be encouraging and to affirm people in different ways, but not as a way of our measuring our worth. And finally, and this is one I'm showing my age so much, so many people just move more quickly than me and speak more quickly than me and have a sense of going somewhere the whole time, whereas I'm just exhausted and want to sit still and just want to listen to the birds for a while. Now, I suspect it's not just part of ageing. I suspect, and this is my version anyway, it's a part of wisdom. Okay, people are running around in all different directions, busying themselves, doing all this sort of stuff, speaking so quickly that I can't keep up, let alone even process what they're saying. I'm saying that's fine. But in my wisdom, I'll just sit here and nod sagely. I'm not taking a word of what is being said in, but I'm just sitting here nodding sagely. And people respect that. Well, that's my version anyway. You see how much the culture is shaped by these dynamics. Okay, where am I going to go with this? Is there an answer to it? How can we shine like stars, as shine as lights in this sort of world? Well, our Western society will tell us that worth is something you can achieve or earn through wealth, status, our ability, our parents, or recognition. That is the message we get from the culture of our Western society. Our Christian values is that it's intrinsic, not something that we have to gain from out there, but it's actually rooted in recognizing that every human being is made in the image and likeness of God. That really shapes me when I'm coming across people who are very different to myself, might be choosing different aspects of their own culture, their way of expressing, to say, people I'm engaging are no less in the image and likeness of God. Now, the extent to which we mar and damage that and mar it and other things changes, but at the core, that is a profound sense of what it means for everyone in humanity, every culture, no matter what our achievement is. Every human has a dignity that cannot be lost. Though, as I say, we can mire it and we can mess it up and otherwise. Other ways in which a Western and Christian approach, and now I'm going to introduce where does the gospel, where does a Christian thought come into the space, is that in Western society, worth can rise or fall with changing trends. People who thought that once upon a time they had made it and they were there suddenly discovered they've been left behind over there. And that is the way that it works. Wonderful book written back in about 2000 by Alain de Botton, who's a Cambridge philosopher. There again, giving an educator descriptor with an education background. Wrote a book called Status Anxiety. And he says that the Western culture is just anxious about comparing ourselves to those in our street, those who are alongside us, that we lose whatever status we've been able to gain for ourselves. It is fraught with anxiety. Whereas the Christian value is that we all stand equal before God, slave or free, Jew or Gentile, male or female. The ground level was all the same when we come before God at the cross. So, where does this take us? Western society will tell us that value is competitive. The danger is to say that my value in life will be dependent on my being more beautiful, richer, smarter, more successful than others to get ahead. And that is a recipe for anxiety. The Christian values focuses more on the gifts that we have received, the inner life, the fruit of the Spirit, holiness, love, and faithfulness that we tell ourselves. In the context of individualism, Western society will often measure ourselves individually, my personal success and uniqueness. The Christian outlook is that our worth is lived out in community, within the body of Christ. And it doesn't matter whether you're a toe or whether you're a finger or whether you're muscle or whatever you may be in that space. We are part of that body, and that gives us a more profound identity. We're even the least members, Paul says, are indispensable. And the whole area around love. In Western culture, love and recognition often feel conditional on performance, status, and image. I am loved so long as I can present as lovely, as long as I can present myself as lovable in that space. And if someone discerns that I'm no longer lovely, or not as lovable, then suddenly that can just evaporate before us. Whereas the Christian value is that our worth is intrinsic. As I've said before, rooted in being the image of God. Every human has a dignity that cannot be lost. So, a summary. This is the summary bit. Western society tends to answer this question of worth in terms of what have you done? What do you have? How do you look? Whereas a Christian way to think about it is to hear the message, you are God's creation, loved and redeemed, and that is your worth. That is huge. A wonderful illustration of this came up in the past week. The World Championships in Athletics has just concluded in Tokyo, and Australia has another world champion. The Australian team did actually exceptionally well. And Nicola Olisluggers got the gold medal for high jump. And you notice that little text that's written on her wrist there? It actually says, all for Jesus. She's a wonderful, very openly expressive Christian believer. Some of us have been following her for a while in her journey. I'm not mentioning her because she won the gold medal. That was quite an accomplishment. I'm mentioning her because the way in which she described it afterwards. Nicola Olisluggers, in her previous attempts, punning on the word for a high jump for making attempts, I think about 10 years ago she went to her first world championship. She got to the final and then she came last. But don't mean she got to the final. She got eliminated in the heats and came last. And that would have been devastating for anyone, having built up all their training and so on. And she was recounting the difference between coming last and coming first. And this is how she says it. So this is the interview that she said after. She was actually picked up on the interview by Channel 9 and others, the Today Show. She had a very similar message. Just, Andy, if you could push the volume up a little bit. Or Charles, could you just help Andy push the volume for the video up a little bit? Just to make sure. It's a little bit hard to cover because it's actually a press conference directly after she'd won the gold medal. Charles, could you check it's actually coming through the right speaker? No, I do want to, it's actually a little bit hard just to check it's going through the, yeah, I think it's going through the TV, which is why it's not working. Thank you, John. It's such a good quote. It's really worth listening to. All good? Okay. She gets that a little bit clearer as she goes.
Okay, I'll just
It's a beautiful quote, and if you get the full interview, and she's actually been, as I say, picked up by the Australian media in a positive way. The bit of the backstory behind the finals for the high jump is that it was teeming with rain, and they had to ensure that the jumpers who could had jumped before the rain didn't have an advantage of those who had to jump during the rain. So they had long breaks, about an hour between some of the ones before the next jumpers could have their fair share of jumping. So it was actually a very stressful occasion. But this is a couple of the quotes from Nicola Olisluggers. She said, "I've just decided to pursue God over sport. Whatever comes with sport is a bonus. I'm already complete and perfect and loved, regardless of it." And that just allowed me to soar over every high bar jump and not to be scared anymore. Because I'm loved, and that's the most important thing. She's quite, in an interview, she said, it actually won't change who she is and her worth, whether she is came first or whether she came last, because she's loved by God. And she goes on in another interview, "The joy that's inside of me can't get drowned out because it's..." Circumstances can change, and our sense of worth in those circumstances is not dependent on how it comes. That source doesn't get diluted because I have God's joy inside of me. Isn't it profound to come back to our passage? Look at the sparrows, Jesus said. Sold for a penny, yet not one of them will fall to the ground without the Father's care. Yet even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not be afraid, because you are worth more.
And again in Matthew 10, "And if anyone gives a cup of cold water to even one of these little ones who is my disciple, truly I tell you, that person will certainly not lose their reward." It's a good passage to get emotional about because I think it touches us, it touches everyone here.
Amen.